From Southern California, this is The Circle of Insight, a show about everything in psychology. Hear the latest in news and views on psychology. Our motto is simple. Wherever there is psychology involved, we are there. And now, here's your host of The Circle of Insight, Carlos Vasquez.
From wherever you are around the world, welcome and thank you for joining us. Today we continue our exploration of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History. I have both books here, first in the JPEG version. You can actually see the books in bigger covers. We also have them here at Studio, Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History, Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History, both books by Manny Pacheco, who is actually in studio. Before we get to Manny, let's learn a little bit about him. Manny Pacheco's extensive career in radio and television has spanned over three decades in Southern California. He hosted the Emmy-nominated In Studio, has written numerous articles on performing, and currently works in commercial acting, voiceover, and radio broadcasting. Welcome to The Circle, Manny.
Well, thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
God, it was a journey down to memory lane in part one. That was so much fun. We talked about Basil Rathbone. We talked about Claude Rains, Lionel Barrymore. You don't want to miss the story on Lionel Barrymore because there is something connected to part three. It's really an amazing story about how much impact Hollywood has. So we're going to continue on with more. I'm really excited. More actors. But I have a private list, and I'm going to clear this list out once and for all here. The two people left, Peter Lorre and Boris Karloff. Let's start off with Peter Lorre.
Well, I brought a picture, actually. Peter Lorre worked in seven or eight movies with Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. They're the original odd couple, as far as I'm concerned. They first appeared in The Maltese Falcon, and then, of course, they appeared in Casablanca, even though they didn't appear together. And the idea was that they had such great screen chemistry that Jack Warner decided to pair them in movies about the duplicitous nature of war and the idea of fighting crime. And at the same time that they were making movies, FDR was also fighting a real war, obviously the Pacific and Atlantic campaigns against Nazism and, of course, fascism. And he put together the best and the brightest scientists and military personnel to put together what we call a top secret operation we now know as the Manhattan Project. And they would work 16 hours a day with their families in tow at bases across the United States. Their seventh day was their free day, their day off with their family. They would spend picnics on Saturdays. And then in the evenings, the scientists and these military personnel would watch a free movie donated by the patriotic movie studios, including movies made by Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre. And what ended up happening is one of the scientists became a big fan of Dashiell Hammett, the writer. And the first bomb that they tested in New Mexico, he nicknamed the Thin Man. The bombs that were dropped in Hiroshima.
Who was in the Thin Man again? It was Myrna Loy.
And William Powell.
William Powell, perfect. I love that one too.
It's a great film. But Dashiell Hammett also wrote The Maltese Falcon. And big fan of Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet, so this scientist nicknamed the bombs that were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Little Boy and the Fat Man. Now, I've been asked, had Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet known about the fact that they're going to be tied to the end of World War II? And, of course, there's no way they would have because it was a top-secret operation. However, again, as I mentioned in the first episode in our conversation, a Hollywood and Vine moment where American history and Hollywood history intersect, they're tied to the end of World War II because of the impact that they had on a scientist who was working on the Manhattan Project. That is just one of those forgotten stories that needs to be shared to an audience. We should never forget that. The impact of Hollywood is just immense, and it happens over and over and over again.
We actually saw that today, in today's time, with Sony. We're not going to get to that till part three, so we're going to have to wait for that.
That's a teaser.
Yeah, unfortunately. Any comments at all about Peter Lorre? I'm a big fan of his Mr. Moto series.
Well, other than the fact that, you know, he was not of Asian descent. Obviously, we did have problems with that. And Hollywood did make some mistakes. I'm not trying to paint Hollywood with this golden swath of positive, because many times their historical facts were wrong. And many times they would do something like that where they put a Hungarian to play an Asian gentleman,
Boris Karloff.
He was also Mr. Moto, but also Charlie Chan, Sidney Toler, and Warner Olin. They were not Asian. Dolores Del Rio, to her credit as a Hispanic, refused to be in the movie Viva Villa because Wallace Beery was not Latino.
Really?
So sometimes the actors stood tall and said, look, you get it right or I won't participate. But many times these actors had to participate because it was part of their contract. And unfortunately for Peter Lorre, he had just moved from Hungary, was trying to get away from the problems of the Nazi regimes in his beloved Hungary. And he was willing to work in English-speaking films, and he was discovered, actually, for English-speaking films by Alfred Hitchcock. And but he was willing to play a Mr. Moto. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing. But we still remember him with a very wonderful performance.
Now, was he, he passed away young, didn't he?
He died in 1964. I think he was 58 years old, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. That's terrible. Did he have any martial arts experience at all?
Not that I know of, no. I don't know any information.
I just saw he kept doing the tumbles and the judo moves, and Mr. Moto's popping in my head.
Might have been a stuntman.
We'll have to do a book on that someday. All right, well, you mentioned the second guy I wanted to give some information about. A lot of you know him already, Boris Karloff.
Boris Karloff was a very serious actor, wanted to star in movies that had nothing to do with crime and definitely nothing to do with monsters. But he was a professional, and when he was called upon to play Frankenstein or any kind of ghoul that he was put in, he would do so with gusto. But off camera, he fought, and he fought his entire life to do serious films. In much the same way that Errol Flynn did not want to be in swashbucklers in every movie he made. He wanted to play in serious movies because they knew that when people like Spencer Tracy and Clark Gable and Humphrey Bogart, when they fought and they made serious movies, there was an Oscar waiting on their mantle. That wasn't going to happen for Boris Karloff or Errol Flynn because they were typecast into these roles. And on top of that, in real life, Boris Karloff was a very gentle soul. He was a horticulturist. He loved flowers.
He loved horticulturist.
He actually loved as a pastime. He could tell you every kind of flower in his garden. I mean, he was a very gentle soul.
Wow, not a perception I had of him. That's fascinating. What was his favorite movie? Did he have one since he was looking to be that star?
Well, I mean, he loved being in the Frankenstein series, but I mean, one of the things that he really signed on to, and very late in his life, surprisingly, and he was so happy to do, was the animated feature How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Oh, to be able to tell that story to children and really get his name out to a whole new generation of audience that might not know who Boris Karloff was, that was one of the great joys later in his life.
Wow, that's fascinating. You know, this is actually going to a theme here. There is a theme. Believe it or not, there's method to my madness.
Hi, welcome to Adelante. This is Adelante Recovery, and my name is Yvette Kuglin, and I'm part of the staff.
Adelante Recovery Center has helped people in dual diagnosis for 5 years. We accept most PPO insurances and provide luxury accommodations and 24-hour support. To speak with an admissions counselor, call 1-888-242-4450.
A lot of time, we don't even know what's wrong with us, and sometimes we need to get away to figure that out. So if you want to go for a little retreat out in Corona Del Mar, which is a confidential location, we're here to help. So we're only a phone call away. Thank you.
David Niven and Cesar Romero, or Cesar Romero, we're going to talk about those two, but I also want to start putting this thought in the back of your head. The differences between stars that were American, or here, born here, or stars that came from other countries. We saw Peter Lorre from Hungary, Boris Karloff, I think it was from Russia.
Oh, no, he was English.
English, yeah. Cesar Romero, I can't remember his ethnicity.
He was actually Puerto Rican, but he lived in New York.
Was in New York.
He was born in New York.
So we'll talk about some of that too. But before we get to the difference between the national stars and international stars, David Niven. I always loved David Niven. I guess a lot of people may remember him from Peter Sellers movies and Pink Panther.
Right.
But he was in a lot of movies before.
Well, David Niven had a remarkable career as a supporting actor. Many of the stars later in their careers, Humphrey Bogart's a great example, always would take third or fourth billing. David Niven always supported folks like Gary Cooper and his good, good friend Errol Flynn. And The Dawn Patrol is a great example of a movie where David Niven didn't star but is absolutely remarkable. He kind of cut his teeth as a supporting actor. And so later in life, when he was able to cultivate this personality that he basically honed and was so good in Around the World in 80 Days, and as you mentioned, the Pink Panther series, by then he was an acknowledged and a big star. But it takes that certain break. And if you don't get that break, you're going to be confined to being a supporting player or a character actor the rest of your career. And in David Niven's case, he got that break, and then Michael Todd was looking for the perfect Phileas Fogg from Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days.
Right.
And when he cast David Niven, it changed his career. And 2 years later, he won an Academy Award for Best Actor for the film Separate Tables, and he never appeared below the title of a movie again.
Really?
Yeah.
Well-deserved. He's a phenomenal actor.
Absolutely.
He's British.
British actor, yeah.
All right, got one. Cesar Romero, everybody knows him as I know him as the Joker. I can't say everybody. We know we just did a show on the psychology of Batman, so it automatically triggered something with Cesar. He was a great, great Joker.
He was a man, again, who, like Lionel Barrymore, defied the idea that even though he was Latino, his parts were not going to mention his ethnicity. So, by and large, his entire career, from start to finish, you don't see him in those ethnic roles, save the idea that he played the Cisco Kid. But if you take that out of the equation, he was in The Thin Man. He was in The Thin Man. Very young Cesar Romero. He was also in Ocean's 11. He was kind of the bad guy opposite Frank Sinatra. Of course, he was in the Batman series. But Cesar Romero was another one of those great individuals. He's a World War II hero who fought in Saipan. Just like James Stewart, just like Clark Gable, just like all of these great actors who fought, and we will talk about that a little bit later, but the idea that Cesar Romero fought the good fight, and he was actually injured, got the Purple Heart, and because of the Great Depression, he supported his family for his entire career. I mean, his mother, his father, his sisters, his brothers, with all of the earnings he made in movies. He's quite a remarkable individual, and that's what he should be remembered for. Look, it's easy to say that he's a great Latino actor, but as a Latino writer, I don't want to be known as a Latino writer. I want to be known as a writer. Well, Cesar Romero wanted to be known as an actor, not a Latino actor, but an actor. And he really worked hard at trying to just take on roles that he could do. And he was quite successful at that. Now, if it called upon the idea of him playing a Latino, he did it with professionalism, and that was not an issue. But whatever the role was, he always did with dignity and professionalism, and he should always be remembered for that.
He sounds like a very classy man.
Very class act.
Well, I have another question. I got to sneak it in here, but I don't want to lose time on the big question, which is how did Hollywood win World War II? So if you can maybe touch upon it briefly, if we run out of time, I guess we can overlap it to part three. TV stars, movie stars. Today's world, well, actually might be changing again, I don't know. In the last 30 or 40 years, you went from TV to movies, you made it to the big time. Now, it's kind of a blurry line.
Right.
But in the 40s and the 30s and the 50s, was there a blurry line? Actually, the 50s when the TVs actually came
television
out.
Television was looked on as that little medium. Actors did not want to perform. However, television was a great experimental process that was used by directors and writers it was kind of like a little mini live stage play. And people like Elia Kazan and Lee Strasberg would employ wonderful young up-and-coming talent who didn't know the difference between films and television, and they cut their teeth in television. Folks like Rod Steiger. and Robert Redford. I mean, Lee J. Cobb. These were actors that were willing to take on small roles in television and establish their careers in television. And then Anthony Quinn was another great example. Great actor on television. Requiem for a Heavyweight. It was written by Rod Serling.
Oh, that's right.
So, I mean, there are a lot of actors. Lee Remick, another great female actor who really cut their teeth. Oh, Joanne Woodward was another actress who was willing to work on television. While her husband, Paul Newman, was on the big screen, Joanne Woodward would be remarkable on the small screen. So, yeah, television was not looked upon. It was looked upon as that other medium. And, of course, the movie moguls were afraid that television was going to take away from the revenue of people going to the theaters.
Sure.
And, of course, that didn't happen. Movies became bigger. They developed the idea of Technicolor and Panavision and all of these wonderful big screen epics, Ben-Hur and Around the World in 80 Days and Bridge on the River Kwai. So movies went in a different direction, but television could tell those very intimate, compelling stories by great writers like Paddy Chayefsky and Rod Serling.
It's funny because I know one of my favorite shows is Gunsmoke. And James Arness, if I remember correctly, did not want to do it originally. He kept turning them down for an audition because he said, no, I need to make it in the movies, not the TV.
But he was convinced by John Wayne to play Marshall Dillon.
That's right. Fabulous show. All right, let's get to the big nitty-gritty here. How did Hollywood win World War II?
Well, basically, I wouldn't say that they won World War II, but they contributed to the war effort. They did it with the Hollywood Canteen that Betty Davis and John Garfield started for the soldiers. They obviously campaigned for war bonds. One of the early victims, Carol Lombard, died as she was trying to raise money for war bonds. Marlena Dietrich, who actually was an immigrant from Germany, would actually, in her native tongue, send messages to free the German people. Charlie Chaplin, to his credit, saw the problems with the Germans and the Jews and the great dictator. And of course, these great actors and filmmakers like Billy Wilder and Peter Lorre and Conrad Veidt and Joseph Schildkraut, all of these great actors, S.Z. Sakal, we would have never known they existed had they not escaped from Austria, Germany, Hungary, Poland, away from Nazi Germany. And they came to Hollywood, and they were able to tell cosmopolitan stories about Europe's days gone by, or contemporary stories where they would play the villainous Nazis themselves to show what was going on to an American public. It really resonated with the public psychologically and socially, and we were able to raise a lot of money through the war bond effort, and we were really able to really assist Winston Churchill and all of the allies. And it was because of Hollywood and of course the filmmakers themselves, Frank Capra and John Ford and Howard Hawks, and they were making documentaries, and they were along the lines, right on the front lines where the bullets were flying by, documenting the war effort to folks back home.
Really?
So Hollywood had a lot to do with promoting the psychological propaganda that was necessary for us to beat Hitler, Tojo, on both fronts. And they were very successful at that.
That's fabulous. Wow. Unbelievable stuff. I know you're all salivating. Where can I get Manny's books? I have mine, but where do you get yours? Manny, where do we go?
Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History, and Son of Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History. Of course, you can go to my website at ForgottenHollywood.com. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can actually get them at great places like Walmart. Great stories for the holidays, told in a Ken Burns style. I think that anybody who has a father, mother, grandparent, uncle, neighbor, or boss, they would love to read these wonderful stories that I think are part of Hollywood's golden age and are part of forgotten Hollywood.
Thank you so much again, Manny. Thank you very much. Trust me when I say this, we only touch the tip of the iceberg in these books. You definitely want to get them. Forgotten Hollywood, Forgotten History. Thank you for joining us. Part three, you don't want to miss. We're going to talk a little bit about contemporary Hollywood and the past Hollywood, the Sony situation with North Korea. Have we ever shut down a movie before? We're going to find out if old Blue Eyes actually did shut down a movie, if you can get that little hint. Remember, our motto is simple. Don't cough when you're trying to give your motto. Wherever there's psychology involved, even in Hollywood, we are there. See you next time, everyone. And now we have a special feature at the end of our show, a singer or talent of the month. This month in March, we have Rebecca Jade. And on this show, listen to Cuts Like a Winter. The quick flash that you gave to